And as I said before, we'll just move right into the sitting practice. So, and invite each of you to allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this might mean sitting, or it might be lying down or continuing to walk. It's more allowing ourselves to touch into the energetics of alertness, of availability. As we take our seats as daughters of the Buddha sitting in the circle, I like to think that women have always done. I always hold this image of us sitting by a bonfire and just imagine just allowing or inviting each one of us to, again, take our place in the circle with a sense of belonging and checking in again. How is this body? For the anchor of our sit today, I'm going to invite us to play with sound. And some of us may be in a place that it's really quiet. So we can just be curious about sort of the subtleties and the nuances of a silence, or what it means, what the quiet means. Others of us may be sitting in spaces where we hear a lot of road noise or construction or dogs or whatever, other humans in our spaces, whatever it is. Can we sort of pull in that image of the body sitting like a mountain, steady in the bones? And then just being curious of how is it? How do we experience sound? Do we lean into it, or what is that? How might it be just to stay, again, steady, still like that mountain, and just sounds come to us? We can often put a story to sound. I like this. I don't like this. I wish that. Why is that person weed whacking or honking their horn or that dog barking or whatever it is? Okay. So that's the mind getting involved. What is it like just to play with? Can we again sit steady like the mountain and just be curious? How is it? How do we interact with sounds? External sounds, and then sometimes the noisiness of our own minds. Can we, again, from a place of sort of embodied lower, like I like to play with having a good amount of energy sort of just in front of the lower spine. So behind the dantian, if that's a useful term, behind the belly button, but sort of deep in ourselves for women, a source of power and knowing and wisdom. How do I experience sound? Can I play with just hearing a sound without having all the opinions about it? And also noticing when the opinions and judgments of the sound, oh, it's just the mind getting all involved. Right. So for the anchor, if it feels like it might be fun to play with, again, sitting, good amount of our energies in the body, grounded in the bones, and then just how do we play with sounds, letting the rest of that attention just rest on the sense doors of sound. No judgments, no feelings, how we should be doing it, but just staying curious. Oh, how do I actually experience sound? And can I remain curious, gentle, as we watch how we respond to the different sounds? And again, some of you may be somewhere where it's really quiet. Okay. Again, there may be subtleties to listen for. Again, not effort, not like reaching out and efforting to find the noise, but just, okay, what can I notice when I allow the attention both in the body and then to rest right on that edge of the sense door of sound? Please, as always, remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see how it is. We have today the blessing of being able to sit together in circle. So, however it is, I'm delighted that we can sit together. lovely as always to sit together. And it's great to be back with you. I was away last week, and I wanted to play around today with the notions of rest. How do we actually rest? My daughter and I and my brother, we spent about 3 or 4 days on a ranch in just on the Wyoming-Colorado border. Beautiful, lovely, all good things. And we then went to spend time with friends in Boulder, and we were both totally exhausted. And I was like, wait, what happened? And been playing since that time of really being curious and kind of investigating one why. But how do we in this time, 2022, with all that's happening in the world, with all that's going on inside us as we respond to things that are happening, how do we actually find rest? And vacations are one thing that are such a privilege and felt so lucky to be able to do that. And yet we can still not rest, right? Sometimes we go on retreats and people are like, that was not restful. Okay. So really wanting to play around, what does this notion of rest actually mean? And in the cons through the lens of Buddhism, it's really, and I've spoken of this before, but where is our energy going? And in the Eightfold Path, there's wise effort as one of the pillars of living in a wise, mindful way. And of the parami of energy, virya, where do we invest our resources energetically, where our minds go, how the energies of our bodies. And one, different ways of working with it. And one is this, the notions of the hindrances. Yeah. Sort of the mind is natural. The mind and the heart are naturally radiant, still mind, radiant heart. And then these hindrances come in to kind of obscure or cloud the radiance of the heart or the natural stillness. And these hindrances sort of classically are grasping, you know, the wanting, the desiring, the wanting mind, craving, aversion, the pushing away. Don't like this. I don't like that. What's wrong with the situation? That mind. Sloth and torpor, which curious words, but just that notion of like the dullness of the mind that can happen, or just a weariness in the body. And sort of that's the flip side of that, the restlessness and worry, restlessness in the mind or anxiety, restlessness in the body or mind. And then doubt is the fifth hindrance, said to be the last to go. I'm sure we all have different experiences relating to doubt and that kind of energy suck. And each of them actually are ways, so we say unskillful investments of our energy. But I want to focus in more on a restlessness, worry, anxiety as in the field of hindrances, to kind of play with that as, again, as it pertains to energy drain, and that the restlessness in the mind, restlessness in the body can sometimes, there's almost like a trick of the mind or a trick of the dominant culture that's like, well, busyness is good, right? Work hard, be efficient, get things done. And that in Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise, which I'll speak of in more depth a little bit later, he looks at that our addiction to overworking is a form of laziness. I'm going to pull it up just because I think it's a helpful way. So he writes, with laziness, it can be rushing around doing a bunch of stuff that's actually motivated by a deep-seated avoidance of what we need to be doing most to address what's actually necessary in our lives, and the ways in which we're running from ourselves, running from what we need to actually turn and face. And again, there's can be really a really subtle what's avoidance and what's just like, no, I'm one of those people that can get a lot done. You know, in that way that, yes, that can be true for many of us. And is there a shadow component? I know for myself in my 20s, I was running, moving, running, traveling. I was absolutely running from myself. But I can watch we can get kind of caught up in the swell of our lives now. Like, oh my God, there's all this to do. And I've spoken before about this sort of endless to-do list, because I've spoke of that book, 4,000 Weeks. In which the writer, whose name is escaping me at the moment, is just like, if we live, we're lucky enough to live to be 85, we've got 4,000 weeks, that to-do list, never going to get done. So let's just put that down. But looking at it again from this way of where we rest, and both on a day-to-day, where are the rest notes in the course of our days? And those of us who are, I don't know if it's luck or determined or fortunate enough to have a morning practice, sometimes we can kind of embed that practice with like doing stuff or getting somewhere or moving farther in the practice, or that we can bring in effort. And I'm using that in a more constricted way, that we have this goal or this thing that we're trying to accomplish with our morning sit or our nighttime sit. Okay. And watching where that striving is actually sliding into more of the shadow energy of, it's not really allowing us to be present. And one of the things I love personally about using sound meditation, it's like, sound's right here. My dog was panting. Okay. And just that nice, there's no sound is not happening in the past or in the future. It's just as a way of, oh yeah, wait, just right here. The construction outside, the kids, the dog, it's right here. It's such a beautiful doorway into, no, wait, just this present moment. Get caught up in the mind. Oh wait, there's a sound. Sound's happening right now. So looking for ways in which the mind can be brought back into this present moment. In Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, The Noble Eightfold Path, he speaks about the antidote to restlessness and worry is displacing the mind somewhere that's pleasant. I'm paraphrasing a little, but I love that notion of, And he's saying, well, mindfulness, when we're mindful, that can be kind of a pleasant oasis for the mind, but also just posing this as a question for each of us. Well, where is when it's come up, this is kind of embarrassing, but of late I will find myself sort of wanting like, where do I want to put my mind? Like where it is currently is not helping me. So where else can I put it? And being able, I've been playing with that question of where is a place for that mind that can run, my mind can run. Where's a nice place to have it just rest? And I think it's important to have a nice basket of options, because mindfulness, yes, absolutely. What does that mean? We can be mindful of the busyness of the mind. Yes. And being able to have a lot of different ways of working with these energies. But this idea of where can we place the mind that will allow all parts of the system to rest? Something to kind of play with. Is it an image? Is it a place? And there's sort of skillful diversions. And that Buddha talks about. Sometimes what's nice is like, no, actually, let's do this. It can be turning towards it. Okay, what's needed here? What's possible? Just making space for this energy that's kind of pulsating and wanting to kind of propel us forward. Oh, wait, let's just sit and make space for this. What's here? Be curious about it. Sometimes it can be overwhelming. Okay, so then do we divert the mind somewhere else? I've said before many times in this class to give the mind something to do, the metta phrases, for example. May I be happy? May I be peaceful? Again, working with the energies that are already here and not trying to force or dominate anything, but just, okay, this is what's here. What's a skillful response? What's the wise response to what's happening when the energies are really high? And some of us might not run with that energy. I do. It's sort of in some ways why I'm talking about this, but the opposite when there's more of a response into sloth or torpor, it's the same thing working with, oh, there's really low energy here. Okay, what might buoy it? Is it standing up? Is it moving? Is it just noticing? Huh? What might be underneath this more depressive? I'm not speaking clinically, but just sort of the energy that's more depressed or quiet. The larger question being, how can I monitor, pay attention, be curious about how energy is flowing and where is it kind of leaking out? And noticing for myself, one of my habits of mind, which I've shared before, is planning. And that's a way, it's just kind of an energy suck, because I don't always need to be planning something. But being able to bring the mindfulness, is that me? I'm doing that thing. That the habit of the mind, and with the skills and the cultivation of slowing down enough to notice, oh wait, I'm doing that thing that's actually not so helpful. Ajahn Suchito in the book, The Paramis, speaks about the stewardship of our energies, that we are protecting and gathering our resources on one hand, and applying and sustaining that energy on worthwhile pursuits. Assessment of what's worthwhile is essential. Where is my energy being invested skillfully such that it may be of benefit to myself or to others, or leading me into a more calm steadiness of mind, leading me away from some kind of stress or agitation? So by those three questions, we can begin to really evaluate, is this a good use of my energy? Benefit for myself, benefit for others? Is it leading me into stress? Is it leading me into a more steady state? And stress might not be the right word, because there is the sort of healthy stress, but more, let's just use anxiety or that agitation. It's like, ooh, this is really unpleasant. And the mind can swirl around in those waters. Okay. So just being able to notice, this isn't helping. And so for me, the question of like, okay, where else can I put my mind? Where is that place, or the myriad of places that I can go, such that I can move into a place of greater ease and calm, which ideally is then much more sustaining, so we're not so tired. In that discernment that comes with being able to evaluate, is this for my benefit, for the benefit of another? Is this stressful? Is this anxiety producing? Is this calm? It takes discernment and wisdom. So wisdom is a key part of how we relate to our own energy. Energy establishes the basis for mindfulness, and it's a way that we can sustain it. So this is from Suchito's book, Step One, is working with the mind, what I've been talking about. And I love this sentence. I've probably quoted it before. The mind's natural inclination is to orbit and check out what's happening in its internal and external domain. It's like we're looking around for either shiny objects that, oh, that's interesting, to be distracted over there, or there's a problem over here, to be distracted over there. But this idea of the mind is constant. The unchecked mind, the untrained mind, is constantly orbiting around for something to either worry about, focus on, or crave. And what I love about this, like, oh, that's how the mind works if we don't work with it. The beauty is when we do get to see, oh, this is this little mind of mine spinning around. I don't have to do that. There's choice. And every time in the beginning, when we do that arriving sit, it's like, isn't this incredible that we can watch the mind, that we have the capacity to sit and watch the patterns of the mind? I love it. It's amazing, because then we can make choices. Oh, this way that this particular mind is orbiting on this particular day isn't working. It's really stressing me out. Okay, I can make a choice. When we're tired, energy is most usefully applied to our being kind to ourselves and letting go of the need to sort out our business. And how often is that the first place we go? Usually, if we're tired, it's like, well, do I have a cup of tea? Do I have coffee? What can I take? Can I get everything done? There's a way in which we have become, I don't know, conditioned to just disregard the fatigue in the body. And often on retreats, when people come sit on the land at Spare Rock, or when we do online retreats, the first couple of days, like, oh, I'm so tired. Like, no kidding. We're tired. Yeah. How it is to stop and unplug, it's a challenge these days when we're so much input that's coming. And again, one of the reasons I wanted to play with sound is it's being a really easy but accessible way of working with how this system responds to external input, sound, right? And do we get agitated? Is there a sort of a chronic case of being in the sympathetic nervous system? So there's like a lot of preparedness, something might happen. Okay, how do we calm that down? How can we work with the nervous system to settle down, to slow the mind, to actually be aware of how do we receive input like sound? But we are receiving input all the time. I know. In this world, whether it's phones, computers, or the need for us to be wired in, the level of data information that we absorb, I think, and this is not just my opinion, it's just more than this nervous system is designed to handle. So when we can take ourselves out into nature, there are less shiny objects, you know, if we don't take our phone with us. But where can we put this nervous system, this body, in a place where it can rest? Yeah. And again, the rest notes. So when in a day, in a work day, or when we're with family, or when we're occupied, where do we find those moments of retreat? And I literally mean moments of just even taking it to check in. Where am I? How is my energy? Am I, what I'm doing right now, what I'm thinking, where my energy is going, is it a benefit to myself, to others? Is it stressing me out in an anxious way? Or is it leading me to calm, to a sense of steadiness? It takes about 30 seconds to run through those questions, but just as a way of remembering, oh wait, can I check in? Is what I'm doing a benefit? In this book, and I've spoken of this before, but I find it so helpful in Suchito's book, online version available, of the yes boundary and a no boundary. And of the no boundary, he writes sort of this question of what do we say no to? And some of us can be, particularly for many of us as women, like, oh yeah, sure, I'll take that on. And what does it mean to say no? That kind of having a firm boundary of saying no, and I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, all that. And that it's more looking at, again, through that lens, what's working, what's not. How do I regulate and direct my energy in such a way that it's life-sustaining for myself and others? And where, again, noting where the mind goes that isn't of benefit. So what causes good mind states to grow? Being in that the particular river that flows into a place of steadiness as opposed to the anxiety river. And we establish boundaries accordingly. Boundaries around actions, what we're doing with our time. Boundaries around our intellectual activity. And I love this because, right, the things that we read, the idea of like, oh, the goals that we might set, I'm going to read all these things, or I'm going to listen to these talks or sign up for these workshops. Really? Is that in your best interest? So that's where craving can come in, the kind of that, I want that. Okay. It can be, again, a kind of trickiness of the striving mind. Oh, these books that I want to read will be good for me, but that is it just more things on the to-do list? So being able to look at the no boundary through this lens of, is this in the service of me or another? Is this leading me to a sense of steadiness and calm or anxiety? And do I have the courage, the faith in my own capacity to know what's right for me, to actually say no, which is tough. In these times when we're constantly kind of being pulled to like, come on, you can do it. Yes, you could. Is it in your best interest to do so? And what does it mean to say no? And I know many women, there's kind of a self, an identity created of something like, oh yeah, I can do that. I can take it on. Yes. At what cost? And being able to pay attention enough to what is this cost going to be? And being honest, actually, it's too much. And again, I'm noticing as wanting to tend to be one of those person that can say, yes, I can do it all, but that cost. And then what is it? Am I working with a vulnerability that may come or a potential sense of weakness that may come and saying, no, I can't do that. Or I don't want to do that. Or just saying that's not appropriate for me at this time. And not even saying this aloud, but just internally being able to give ourselves enough permission to say, not now. So that's the no boundary, the yes boundary. What do you truly, he writes, what do you truly want to pursue with aspiration and maintain it with investigation and recollection? Putting energy into what you know is worthy will give rise to joy. The importance of backing up our aspirations and actions with mindful investigation, being clear. What is this? Is this actually serving me? And what does that feel like? And that beautiful invitation of when we know that what we are investing our energies worthy and congruent with what we truly believe, joy will arise. Yeah, it's a nice feedback loop. To that point about joy arising, in Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise, he talks about joyful effort, as I mentioned before, and the factors of joyful effort, the desire, Again, the longing. What's the heart really want to do? What matters to us? And we've done this exercise before about our true, what do we really value? What's most important to us? And allowing that, again, to be the constellation by which we can orient our lives. But I think it's also allowing it to come down into the mundane moment to moment. Is what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, what I'm investing my energy with in alignment with the values that I hold dear? Other factors in this joyful effort that Norman Fisher talks about, integrity is wholeness, not divided against ourselves. We're not blocking our own energy with inner contradictions. We're not getting bogged down by a sense of being defeated or disappointed or unhappy. The negative thinking that can kind of have its own energy. He actually calls that a part of a laziness too. It's sort of not stepping into our innate courage to say, I don't actually have enough time in my life to be spending in these negative swirls. He does make a distinction, I want to also, about when we're in a more clinically depressed place, it's not so easy. So sort of being aware there are conditions and causes and brain chemistries at work here that need to be considered. But on just watching, again, the play of the mind, where does it habitually go? And is it going into a place of kind of negative talk, the kind of aversive complaining? Okay, is this helping me? Can I make another choice? He speaks again, courage, working with fear. We constantly fear, he writes, humiliations, exposures, embarrassments, and failure. They can influence most of our most ordinary responses and viewpoints. Again, super normalizing this notion of, yeah, we're scared. They're scared of many things out in the world, climate change, guns, all those things, but also internally, the ways in which our fears that can be unconscious and not fully recognized about being humiliated, being exposed, being vulnerable, influence our everyday actions, which keeps us in this kind of small comfort zone. Well, I don't want to do that because I want to stay small. And the invitation, and this, his book is really about the Bodhisattva Bhava. Can I step into a more courageous place? One other of the factors of this joyful effort, this joyful investment of our energies, is the vow. And I want to share a little bit about the vow as an expression of a deep intention and vision, a horizon towards which you will forever journey. This vow, this is not about promises we keep. It's to express a firm commitment to a path and to a way of life. To practice a vow means to embrace it in a heartfelt and serious way. It's a guiding principle, like the Bodhisattva vow of beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. There's not a sense of, oh, sure, I'll get that done. It's a guiding star. So if you'll bear with me a little bit more, I want to share a poem and then we'll do a guided exercise, if that's okay. Don't get carried away. So this poem by David White, All True Vows. All true vows are secret vows. The ones we speak out loud are the ones we break. There is only one life you can call your own, and a thousand others you can call by any name you want. Hold to the truth you make every day with your own body. Don't turn your face away. Hold to your truth at the center of the image you were born with. Those who do not understand their destiny will never understand the friends they have made, nor the work they have chosen, nor the one life that waits beyond all others. By the lake in the wood, in the shadows, you can whisper that truth to the quiet reflection you see in the water. Whatever you hear from the water, remember, it wants you to carry the sound of its truth on your lips. Remember, in this place, no one can hear you. And out of the silence, you can make a promise it would kill you to break. That way you'll find what is real and what is not. I know what I'm saying. Time almost forsook me and I looked again. Seeing my reflection, I broke a promise and I spoke for the first time after all these years in my own voice before it was too late to turn my face again. So I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. To take a minute, because that was a lot of words for me. And come back into your body. Feel Feel yourself sitting on the cushion, the chair, the couch. And in your mind's eye, allow yourself to perhaps walk upon this a path through the woods to come to a beautiful still lake or pond. And allow yourself to sit down on that sandy beach just to the left of the path. And to look into the reflection of the pond or the lake. To notice that quiet reflection of yourself in the water. And to ask yourself what matters to you in this moment, in this life, what matters. Another phrasing, what do you love? What might you give your life to? Just notice what comes up. It might be a variety of things. Notice which rings as most true. What can you feel internally through the core of your body that you know to be true? Yes, this is what matters. Maybe one thing, it may be a few. And what secret vow might you be willing to make to yourself to honor that which matters, that which you love? A secret vow you whisper only to that reflection, that quiet reflection in the water. This vow that points to a horizon to which we will spend our lives journeying towards. It's not a goal. It's an orientation. It's a state of being. What is that secret vow through which you can filter how you invest and spend your precious life's energy? What is your secret vow? This would take a few minutes to kind of let whatever comes settle. Perhaps to bookmark this as a question to come back to. Let me stop here and so appreciate your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.